Okay, I would like to call to the order the River Forest meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission for Thursday, January 29th. Luke, can you take the roll, please?
Chair Franek,
Here.
Commissioner Forehand,
Here.
Commissioner Sager,
Here.
Commissioner Schützenhofer, Commissioner Graham White, Commissioner Murr is not here. We have a quorum.
Public comment, sir. We'll be talking about it later, but if you have anything further you'd like to add. Okay. All right. Approval of the meeting minutes for December 17th. Are there any comments?
I just had one minor thing on page 2 of 3, section 5, the second paragraph. It looks like maybe you left out a commissioner.
Ah,
Sec
yes.
seconded by commissioner, adopt the proclamation in honor.
Okay.
No, that was that's all I saw.
Carrot, commissioner, carrot.
Any other comments?
No.
Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Is there a second?
Chair Franek,
Aye.
Commissioner Forehand,
Aye.
Commissioner Sager,
Aye.
Commissioner Schützenhofer, Commissioner Graham White.
Okay. Proposed review of the Village Historic Preservation Ordinance in terms of the rewrite. I want to start with sort of a few comments. Mr. Dwyer was kind enough to forward some substantiating materials, and I've gone through them all, including the Secretary of the Interior guidelines and standards, which are, by their terms, advisory. And I have some thoughts. And part of it is reading from Luke's memorandum. At the December 17th, 2025 HPC meeting, two residents provide a public comment regarding an application for proposed lighting at the River Forest Tennis Club that has since been withdrawn. The residents expressed the view that the Historic Preservation Commission or the Village Preservation Code should have a role in reviewing proposed lighting at the site. They requested that the commission review the attached documents at a future meeting. The documents are listed as follows. I reviewed those materials at length and have the following comments. The first item that Mr. Dwyer referenced is in his comments, it was said that the Oak Park Ordinance addresses this issue. And it was inferred that in addition to the ability to review, Oak Park had some form of role to reject such proposals. I had asked Luke to contact the Village of Oak Park to get a specific reference, as Mr. Dwyer had not provided one. And Luke reached out and was contacted by the urban planner for the Village of Oak Park, who has responsibility for administering the HPC. And he sent an email to Luke, which, Luke, if you would be so kind, if you could read that into the record.
Okay. I cannot remember the gentleman's name right now, but he was the urban planner who I think is currently their in-house staff person for historic preservation. We had had a brief phone call, and then I asked him to shoot me an email, and here it is. We do not regulate lighting in a situation like the one you were discussing with the tennis courts. We would regulate if they were disposing of historic lighting or putting up lighting that made changes to the structure of a contributing historic building. Here's a quote that references our recommendations, not rules. When possible, the HPC encourages the use of original lighting adapted for contemporary use, such as increasing brightness with new or additional energy-efficient bulbs and historic light fixtures. Where a building no longer has original lights or never had them, the HPC encourages the use of a lighting design that includes fixtures compatible in age, style, and scale to the building or which are unobtrusive and not suggestive of a style or age. At most, if this were the Village of Oak Park, we would encourage a non-binding advisory review, but otherwise, this is not something we would regulate.
Okay. I think that's consistent with what a lot of villages do. They do not regulate the illumination. When they speak of lighting, their language sometimes expressed is that they regulate the fixtures. They're interested in the look, the appearance. So for instance, if there is a historic building that has a prairie style or has 1890s style arc lighting or something, they would prefer that to be the substitute. However, they do not regulate the intensity of the lighting or the scope of the lighting or where the light shines. You had referenced something from Hinsdale. The reference is, in fact, silent as to lighting. You had referenced something from Lake Forest that references architectural features. It is silent as to lighting. You had referenced something from Naperville. It talks in terms of the type, design, and character of all windows, doors, light fixtures, and appurtenant elements. I think it's what they're speaking about is light fixtures as architectural features that are visible from the public street. There are sort of two reference materials that we used in gathering materials for the definition of significant properties. One is we commissioned a request for proposal, an RFP, and this would have been 2013, I believe. And we got submissions from architects all over the country. As it happened, we chose two architectural firms to work in tandem, one in Oak Park, the other in City of Chicago. And they reviewed all structures in the village to determine what they were. And they came up with a two-page form that indicates those areas that they determined would be of significance and how they referenced with the standards of the National Register and the Historic Preservation Act. In looking at that, and you can see the specifics for any of the individual sites by logging on to the village website, vrf.us Historic Preservation Survey. And the one for 615 Lathrop does not mention either the tennis courts or it does not mention the lighting. Similarly, the other piece of materials that we used is probably the longtime leader, the doyen, if you will, of historic preservation in our village was a lady named Jeanette Fields. And she wrote a guide to river forest architecture. And it also speaks in terms of almost 100 buildings throughout the village, including that is the tennis club. And her writings do not say anything about lighting or the tennis courts. Based upon the materials that you presented, I don't think that we really should have input on the illumination, the what the tennis court chooses to do or not do. I think that's a zoning matter. You had also provided the Secretary of the Interior standards and guidelines, which are 240 pages. I went through those. I saw nothing that explicitly references lighting. However, I have no problems referencing these. We have on our website various reference materials, such as the IHPA, such as various tax regulations and other things. I have no problems adding that to this. Is this as that's for sort of just guidance material that someone could read and take a look at. But I personally don't see anything in what you provided to us that can be interpreted to impact the illumination of the building itself or the tennis courts. Secondarily, I'm also somewhat, I'd be leery of doing something that impacted the illumination of historic structures, because I wouldn't want someone to use that as the basis to complain about what someone does. We have a gentleman in our village. He's the owner of the former Tony Accardo home on Franklin, who is known for his extravagant holiday light displays. I wouldn't want someone to point to this and say, yeah, but someone's shining an excessive amount of light on his building, which is in fact both his, it's a significant property for both an architectural and a historic perspective. So does anyone else have any thoughts?
I agree. I couldn't say it better. And when I was addressing this too, I was thinking about the, when you mentioned the standards from the architectural survey team and that two page and yeah, in fact, we have just under 300 significant properties. And I randomly looked at some of those and there's nothing.
The thing we did, by the way, just to give some background, what happened is when survey team came back with a sheet like this on all of the properties, they recommended to us to have some significant designation as significance. We then had a series of very lengthy hearings that went until 11 or 11:30 on several occasions for several months, going through each one of those specifically to determine whether, and at that time we had two architects on our commission. Since the passing of David Reynal Ogden, we only have one at this point. But we looked at them in great depth to see if there was, to make sure that everything was there. So,
could you hop up to the mic just for the record?
Yep. And if you could just identify your name and address for purposes of the record. I don't think you're picking up on the mic.
Is there a little green light on the mic?
You got to press it.
Ah,
there we go.
Okay.
There you go.
Dave Dwyer, 616 Lathrop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what we thought of when we came is not so much the lighting itself, it's the light fixtures that would be added. And for me, and I just noticed this, walking west on Oak towards the or along the tennis club, you know, it's a pretty wide open, yes, there's a fence, but it's pretty vast. You know, it's a very large space, which, you know, historically, that's how it should look. You put a bunch of sticks up. It's not even at night, it's during the day. That's what we thought of in terms of the historic component of that proposal, was this is a club that, you know, it's a historic club. It's been here. Tennis is a daytime, at least historically a daytime event or activity. And to put up those, you know, sticks along the street, you know, that would really, that's what we saw was visually impacting everything. So it wasn't, yeah, specifically the lighting. Yeah. And I understand that, yeah, historic preservation. They do say, try not to light. You know, if you haven't lit before, don't light now. You know, or if you do, but that was our point. It wasn't so much lighting. It was light fixtures, and the kind that they're going to put in, and the number they're going to put in. So,
okay. Appreciate your comments.
Sure.
Thanks for coming. Any other comments, Rich? Look, you've got, you're leaning forward to the mic. Okay. Okay. Carla? Okay. John?
You pointed it out very well. Thank you for doing that research. So
you're most welcome. It's in retirement, I fortunately have the time that I can go through this stuff. Okay. Comments as to the ordinance itself. We are coming down the home stretch. I have given Luke a couple of comments that I took a look. He and I have gone back a couple of times to do some drafting and to focus and to make it, I think, flow better from an organizational standpoint and also read much more clearly than its prior ordinance, particularly given the fact that we're adding the additional layer of looking at accessory structures, which we have increasingly been asked to look at. This will effectively codify the rules that we have sort of developed and how we deal with them in terms of do they reach significant status? If not, then the Architecture Review Subcommittee can make a determination. If they do, then it goes to the commission, what that process is. There are a couple of things I did note from our last meeting. There were a couple of issues that we needed some input on that were kind of left to, was it Noodle?
Yeah, Noodle, in the word.
I believe it was Noodle.
Yeah.
The first is, what is the triggering time that starts the clock running if the HPC declines to issue a certificate of appropriateness for a proposed demolition of a significant property? Both those in the so-called PRI zone, the public recreational and institutional zone, which has got a different time frame. It's slightly longer because of the size and complexity of those properties, and those that are not PRI zone, but still significant properties. The question is, when does the clock start on that? And we had, as currently drafted, the ordinance states the clock starts to run from the filing of a completed application with the commission. There was some discussion at our last meeting that the clock should really start from when the HPC renders its decision. So, what do we wish to do?
It certainly makes sense to me to start it once we've made our decision, because we don't really know the length of how long it'll take us to get to that point. Seems to make all the sense in the world to me.
I would think that before the one meeting,
I agree too.
Okay, I would agree. So it looks like the five of us here would we would want to start it once the HPC renders its final decision, just so we get everybody on the record. It's not a formal motion, but Jan, yes, no?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
I'm yes. Carla, yes?
Yes.
Rich, yes. Okay. Secondly, there was also discussion. The current ordinance provides that if someone wishes to have their property designated by the commission as a local landmark, that the owner would apply, and there is a process which involves, as it would involve the demolition of a significant property, advertisement in a newspaper, mailing of notices to people within, was it 500 feet, Luke?
I think so.
A yard sign, et cetera, et cetera. And there was some thought that that might be a bit excessive and might be viewed as a deterrent to people because of the time. And frankly, there's some expense involved in that, given the fact that they're willing to make their property subject to some ordinances of the village. So people have thoughts as to whether we should retain the lengthier process of designation as a local landmark with mailing notices, posting a yard sign, publishing in the newspaper, or do we do something less intense?
So Dave summarized it, and this comes back to the, they would have to do the certified mail return receipt requested and the newspaper notice, the yard sign and all that good stuff. And then also a public hearing, and just kind of go off what Dave said. And in my opinion, they're attempting to designate their property specifically for this. It's a local landmark designation. It's not a significant property, so it has more and substantial weight to it. Do we want to have that level of boxes to check for someone who's attempting to make their property a local landmark?
Well, to me, it doesn't sound like it's, especially as a local landmark, and not just wanting to make changes to your property. But as a local landmark, it doesn't seem overwhelming to me to go through all those steps.
Okay, so you would be in favor of retaining the existing. Okay. The distinction, I believe, with a local landmark is, as with a significant property, our comment would be advisory as to any exterior changes, just as it would with anything else, so that if, as an example, if we had chosen to look at lighting because it was presented to us at the tennis club, we would again be purely advisory if in fact we did it, because that's our rule. The only time that we have the ability to deny something is with a significant property. Someone wants to demolish it, we can delay that demolition. As presently stated, the distinction with a local landmark is we can say, no, you can't do it. Now, the property owner can also appeal to the village board, as with any of our decisions, if someone in fact wants to do that. But that is something that I don't think, you know, that's what the distinction is. So, yeah.
So, okay. So the homeowner is putting a larger onus on himself or on the property, basically more protection on the property.
Yes. They're putting an increasing level of protection
right.
on the property by designation as a local landmark. I guess my question would be, and I don't know what the answer is. Typically, the purpose for the notice and hearing, and I mean, I can see a hearing, but the reason for like the yard sign and the publication and the correspondence to people within 500 feet is to sort of warn them because there could be some potential detriment. That's what you do if there's a use change in the zoning code, or that's what you would do if there is a proposed demolition, any of which would impact the neighborhood. So,
yeah.
Significant property.
Carla, we can hear you, but I don't know if the microphone's picking you up. So you just lean forward, and I appreciate you wearing a mask, and there's no issues with that.
Can you just tap the push? I can see. Yep.
There it is.
There you go.
That makes a difference. Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Is there that significant properties are by the commission. So say my house never have to have any of that, the signs or your notifications or anything. And I think it's a big step to ask, I haven't even thought of this until now, somebody who wants to landmark their home, which places the onus on them, and then asks them to go, you know, further, more steps to do it. And I'm not sure if that makes, to me, it doesn't make sense. What are the ones besides the sign? Yeah,
the sign,
newspaper,
and then the certified mail return receipt requested, and then also the public hearing. So
how does Oak Park has over 70 landmarks now?
No idea.
Locals
don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
and there has to be some kind of a process that the commission.
Oak Park's got.
Huh?
Oak Park is different. They by and large, my recollection. Correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, because you probably looked at it more recently than I. But I think what Oak Park does is they tend to regulate properties by district, as opposed to individual properties.
I can speak to that.
Yeah.
So Oak Park has a two-layer system, and so they have what they call contributing properties and non-contributing properties to a historic local historic district. So the local historic district kind of sits over the top, and then if you do work, then is that a contributing property or a non-contributing? And that's where they review. The local landmarking is outside of that. And I talked to Doug Carr years ago about that. And that's where I found out that they have this two-tier system, whereas we have the one tier. So their process from local, they have local landmarks that are outside their local historic districts.
Okay.
So again, so I guess, you know,
sure.
What role does the commission play? And then what is the, I think they have 72 now.
Okay.
So it's an ongoing process. Maybe it'd be helpful to see.
We're coming back for at least one more go around on this.
Sorry
to say that, Luke.
But
I'm here for.
If we're going to encourage ever local landmarking, we want to do it. And so if there is the sign and the mailings and then that's
maybe. Yeah. My response is sort of twofold. One is, I like the idea of seeing what Oak Park did, because they're sort of they've got the most fulsome ordinance around, certainly in our area. The other thing is maybe we can sort of shave off some of the more onerous things, like, it makes sense to have a public hearing. Maybe you put up a yard sign. But do you really have to publish it in the newspaper and send certified mail return receipt requests to everybody within 500 feet? That's like, you're not putting in a toxic waste dump. What you're doing is you're putting some additional restrictions on the exterior of your property. Not all that bad.
Yeah. So theoretically, in our role, we want to encourage people to do this.
Absolutely.
So take off some of the steps needed.
How many landmarks do we have in River Forest right now?
We've got one that we did, and one where someone tried to self-landmark, and there was a passage of time and nobody said anything, right? On the north side.
Well, it's in the survey that it's a landmark. Yeah. So the Troost House, 15 whatever, Franklin.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if there's any documentation.
And I don't know. I mean, I could always contact Doug Gilbert if he was the individual that did that. Did the individual review of that particular property. I know he did a bunch of them. To determine when they say landmark, it's also possible that that may reference some federal designation, like Laurel McMahon's former home has got a federal designation, but I don't believe it's a River Forest landmark.
You know, the word landmark gets tossed around pretty freely.
Yeah.
The 518 Keystone is a landmark house. It's the big old Second Empire house. It's not locally landmarked, but it's considered to be River Forest. So, yeah, and we want to speak in legal terms. So you're right about the 1500 block of Franklin, that home. I don't know that we have documentation about that.
Well.
But I think it'd be easy to find out what Oak Park, what their role they play once the owner.
Yeah, I can get into that for sure, dig into it. I just think Dave touched on it briefly, and speaking frankly, Commission, I think on staff side, the one thing that I would suggest the commission maybe review regarding this is the certified mailers. They're over $10 a pop right now. And for the last project, we had a garage demolition at 715 Clinton. That 500-foot radius is over 200 properties. So that's over $2,000 for those certified mailers. Now, regular mail, that sort of thing, I think is they are attempting to make a local landmark. So people should definitely be informed. But I think that would be staff's one put out on the table, we'll call it. Other than that, yes, I will do due diligence and research what Oak Park does and get to the bottom of that.
Luke's developed this quick dexterity to reviewing what other ordinances do. Kudos to him on that.
Thank you, Luke.
Okay.
If we were going to drop some requirements, those are the two I would drop, Dave, is the mail and the newspaper.
Yeah.
I agree.
The hearing makes sense.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful here with the legalese, a true public hearing, I think by law, has to have the paper notice, put in the paper. We could have just a regular meeting, send out mailers, but there's more legal implications and stuff for a public hearing. Like we recently, the village board, if there's something about some items, they do a public hearing for. I think we recently did a bond issuance and you do a public hearing and it's a little bit more, I don't know, serious is the tone. So we can have just a regular meeting and have the sign and the mailers, but I think we have to, in the verbiage of this, be careful with the public hearing because there's some separate legal implications there.
So what you're saying, it really comes down to the cost of the stamp. The rest of it would stay. If it's a public hearing, would
the public hearing, you can just send regular mail is my understanding. Or just a regular meeting, we could send regular mail.
But the newspaper publication, the sign, yeah.
And certify, and the newspaper, for let's say we were doing a zoning ordinance or something like a zoning, I can't think of the name, a variation, wow. That is just regular mailers within 250 feet of the property line, and then a sign, and then a notice in the paper, and that is it. But that's for a true public hearing. We're getting gritty here. The HPC has the most strongest requirements of all the village codes. No other village code has the 500-foot requirement, and no other village code has the certified mailers.
As a Historic Preservation Commission, we are old school. I say that in jest, but
I mean, that's
what
good.
Luke is saying resonates to me from my prior legal life.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if we're going above and beyond what's typical, I think we can pull back on that.
Okay. Those are the two things that I had that I thought were unresolved. Now, there's also subsequent revisions that were dropped at your residences. I've got a couple of minor thoughts. I've handed them to Luke, a copy, for purposes of certitude as to the precise insertions and the locations. So I can go through those. We can, what I prefer to do is frankly go page by page and see if anybody else has got something, because, you know, this is not a monologue. Notwithstanding the amount of time I spent with this thing. So, does anyone have any thoughts on page one?
No, none here.
None.
No.
Okay. Two?
Nope. Mm-mm.
Nope.
Anything on two?
The only question I have, I think I brought it up at one of the other meetings, is that is in terms of the role, is it authoritative or advisory? And should it be mentioned here in the scope, purpose, and goal?
And you're speaking as to which of the subsections?
Sorry?
Which of the numbers, sub-numbers?
Well, I was looking at page two.
Right.
Yeah.
But would it
fit in anywhere here where we're talking about scope, purpose, and goal? Should we more clearly try to define, does this commission, is it an authority or is it advisory only?
I think what happens is later on in the document, there are a couple of instances where we say we're only advisory, and some instances where it comes to demolition of significant properties, particularly when it comes to local landmarks, we're it.
Yeah.
Subject to review by the village board.
Yeah, I think I saw one place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Page three, I have one insert. And that is in the Architecture Review Subcommittee definition. After the insert or accessory structures, I would add parens, which are determined to require review by the full commission, close parens. This is where we basically say that the Architecture Review Subcommittee kicks it up to the full commission when it determines that the accessory structure is of such vintage quality significance, if you will, as one of the principal structures on the significant property itself. Then it goes up to the full commission. That's just clarifying it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Nothing else here.
Anything on three?
Nope.
anything on four? Page four.
No.
No.
No. No.
Anything on five?
No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No.
Anything on six?
No.
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 Seven. I promise we're getting to comments later. Seven.
No.
No.
Nope.
No.
Eight.
Yeah, I've got one.
Okay. Nine. Two comments.
Wait, hold on, Rich. Did you say you had something for page eight?
For page eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So we talk about withdrawal of property designation, whether it's ceased to meet criteria, it was an error or misstatement. So my question is, what if the current owner, and I know that when you buy a property that's on the list, you know, it's mentioned in the real estate listing and all that. But let's say the owner doesn't want to be on the list. Is there a way for the owner to have his property removed from the list? For whatever reason, let's say, you know, he wants to make changes that he doesn't feel is going to be approved.
Well, it's advisory, what we do anyway. So even if it's not approved, the owner can always make those changes anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think there... I don't think it should be up to
the owner.
You mean like an opt-out? No. Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, just a question. Okay.
Page nine.
You have comments. You were first.
Two comments. One in 1316A in the third line. I would delete the phrase without the prior issuance. This is where we're dealing with the, so let's back up for a second. No, that's okay. Withdraw that. I would add at the end of that, however, I would add, no demolition of a local landmark shall be done with either one, the prior issuance of a certificate of appropriateness, or two, the village board's reversal on appeal. I'd make absolutely explicit what's going on, because earlier on, we talk about what you can do and what you can't do on a significant property and a local landmark, but we've taken demolition out of the first sentence. The second sentence deals with demolition of a significant property. This new third sentence would deal with demolition of a local landmark.
So this third sentence would be tacked on at the end after that chapter?
Yes. Period?
Okay.
Yeah. My only other thought on that page is I see where an exhibit B has been added.
So at some point, I can't, Dave and I have been talking a lot. I can't remember when it was. We discussed potentially taking this section about the application requirements and just putting it as an exhibit at the end. So instead of having someone kind of read this or flip through the page, we could just be like, I could just be on the phone. I'm imagining myself. Just go to the last page of the document, and maybe with the commission can work on a a blank application or an example application or something like that to put at the end. So once it just kind of tightens up the ordinance, or we could say per exhibit B. So it'd be at the end, kind of like after the flow charts, maybe would be this. And that was our thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Anything that's helpful.
That's got a lot to argue in its favor. Let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Do we want someone to read the whole process, at least in, you know, a couple of pages, in terms of what the process is? Because could someone come back to us and say, I didn't realize fill in the blank? Well, that's because you looked at an exhibit. I mean, what we could always do is we could tag in at the end of the exhibit what we do on the flow chart that basically says this is a synopsis and is not meant to contradict anything within the body of the ordinance. We could do that. I mean, I'm okay if we do that, because that kind of takes out that, gee, I didn't know. I'm sorry you didn't know, but, you know, you got to read, or your representatives have to read.
That makes sense. And does that satisfy what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Okay. I think what's happening now is all the architects will shoot it to AI, and that'll give them the list of what to do.
Yeah. As are lawyers, as is everyone. It's, yeah, you know, it's gonna,
right,
on the one hand, it's gonna provide quick answers. Hopefully they're correct answers,
right?
Because it, I think, may miss nuances, and that's what as humans are good at.
Yeah.
So
a bigger subject, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I'm not 50 years younger. You know, 45 years younger.
Yeah.
Just getting out of school. Jane, you had some comments.
Yeah. It's so I think there's a word miss. So we're still back on A, and it's the 1-2-3rd line, the prior issuance. And then we jump to compliance.
Mm.
And I think we're missing a connecting word.
Mm-hmm.
In compliance, with compliance. It's easier to read without the red, you know, the second copy that doesn't have the red and says.
Actually, maybe even longer. If you leave in without the prior issuance, you would add of a certificate of appropriateness and compliant, and then back in compliance with sections 1317A or 1317B.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good catch.
Prior issuance of certificate of appropriateness.
Yeah. No, that's good.
And then for some reason, I put a question mark. I kind of circled, maybe we covered this. It's the first two sentences there on A. And I wrote, what about structure behind the principal structure? Why would I have written that?
Structure behind the principal structure.
Yeah, why would I have said that?
Well, we've had discussions at this table about, I think there was a fun discussion about, can you have multiple principal structures, or was it a principal use as a term? Maybe it was something to do with thinking back on that thought.
Thinking accessory structures?
Or... You can have multiple principal structures on the same property. We're using principal rather than primary, because you can have only one primary by definition. But I think I think the intent is that when, if the architecture review subcommittee determines that changes should be kicked up to the full commission, then it's treated as a significant, because it's part of a significant property. Significant property includes not only the principal structures, but also the accessories as well.
Okay.
I think.
You may just hold on to it and then next time see if it.
Yeah.
Stick a pin in it?
Yes. Noodle on it.
Okay. Thank you. And that was it, because
I use it outside of work now too.
Create a monster.
Yeah.
Anyone else have anything on 9?
No.
Nope.
10.
No.
Nope.
No.
No.
11. I have two comments. Second line of 1317A, I would delete the phrase facade visible from a public street or sidewalk and just insert street facade, SF initial caps, because we've already defined that as a term of art.
Mm-hmm.
And my only other comment is in the last line. The first word is of. How about following? Because I think that's what it's intended to. It's X number of days of a submission.
Where are we?
Last line.
1317B, the last line. All the way at the bottom.
Okay. Oh, the of on the. Okay. The first word on the last line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I must not have photocopied that, Luke. I'm sorry.
I'm going along mine just.
Okay.
Just to have some.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As opposed to this.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Any other comments on page 11?
No.
Nope. No.
Page 12.
Yes.
Jim?
D, demolition of significant property or capital local, capital landmark.
I would actually delete that. The phrase or local landmark, because it's dealt with an E, and E basically is thou shalt not demolish a local landmark without our consent.
Oh.
And D is there's a delay.
Whoopsie.
Thank you. Yeah. So remember.
Any other?
No, thank you.
I've got a couple. The first line up top in C. Progressive and owner or the commission, I would delete and prior to filing for a building permit. I think by definition, this is all prior to filing an application for a building permit.
It is, but I do think this is the only place in the whole, in the entirety of the ordinance that specifies that change that the commission said. That the commission wants people to come before they file for a building permit. And I think this is the only area in the whole ordinance that it says that. So
okay.
I'll look through it, and if any of the other commissioners have thoughts.
Okay.
No, I agree with that clarity. I don't remember seeing it anywhere else.
Because as the ordinance currently stands, they file a building permit, and then this process begins, and the commission wanted to, in light of the windows and basement comments.
That's perfectly good sense.
So
I have two comments, both the same in D1 and D2, and they are after the insert inserted words, a final determination. It says, following the commission's final determination and a public hearing. Isn't following the commission's final decision after a public hearing?
About following the commission's final determination and a public hearing regarding the issuance. Can you repeat your question, Dave?
Sure. After the words final, rather than final determination and a public hearing, I would say final decision after a public hearing. I think after should replace and, whether it's decision or determination, six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't really, you know, I think decision may be more precise, but it doesn't, I'm not hung up on that. But I think we got to get after in.
It's up to you.
Because that's how we make that final decision.
Okay.
So, and the same thing in D2, final determination or decision after a public hearing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anything else on 12?
No. Nope.
13. I have a couple of comments. In B2, and this is, and I think, Luke, where we've got, I just noticed we got B1 and then you got 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
It should be B1 and should be little a, little b, little c, little d.
Yes.
Yes. Good catch.
Somewhere there's an English teacher smiling.
Yeah.
In item 2, that begins with if the commission or the architecture review subcommittee, the first reference, I believe, should be 13.18a, not 9.
Oh.
And I would add the following, just to be absolutely certain, where it says, proposed in accordance with the procedure set forth in 13.18a, insert, in the case of an application excluding demolition, and back in, and 13.18c1 in the case of, insert, an application for a back in demolition.
Wow. Wow.
Again, the intent is to try to lessen the need to go flipping back the subsections for people that don't do this all the time. Because we're trying to make this more user friendly. And honestly, I think we've done that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything else on 13.
No.
Nope.
14. Then in 14, this is in 14 and 15, this is when we do that it's 9 or 12 months following decision by the HPC rather than the currently filed application. And that occurs in E2 for approval for a significant property and E3 for demolition. No, it's not because it's final. Sorry. It's only in E2. Anything else on 14?
No.
Nope.
No.
On 15.
Nope.
No.
16.
No.
17.
No.
Nope.
Nope.
18.
No.
Obviously, we'll update it to 2026.
Mm-hmm. He's supposed to have that one.
19.
Nope.
Nope.
We'll need to, no. There you go. We'll need to update the flow chart if necessary.
Yep. So I would think at the next meeting, along with the, let's hope, is the final draft. Not that I'm not enjoying this. Will be the flow chart and that exhibit B, we'll call it, with the draft application with the disclaimer. I don't know if that's a proper term about, make sure you read the code. Don't just rely on this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think having now the flow charts then will help us confirm
absolutely
our ordinance.
I was thinking about that as well. So we'll have them up on the screens and we can all.
Oh, good. Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, I think that's great.
No, this is actually something. If you go back to your eighth grade and diagramming sentences, you can actually look at this thing now, I think. And you can say, yeah, this makes sense. You just go here and you go here and you do this, you do that. That's like the flow chart, but within the body, as opposed to you need to know where this thing is defined. So you got to go back in and go back in and go back in. And this, I think, is certainly a very positive step in the right
direction. You've done, the two of you have done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else regarding the proposed rewrite?
Nope.
Do you think you need an index for somebody like the first page or two, that if you're looking for specific thing, you could go to the index?
I can't believe no one said that. That's
yeah.
Or I've never thought of that. Yeah.
That's why we have new people on the
commission. I'm telling you. Yeah, it's civilians and this stuff happens. No, it's great. Thanks, Rich. I think it's a very good idea.
So once we vote, once we get this gelled, what is the process? Is it presented to the village board after that? How does what's
so it would, I think it would go to it comes as a recommendation to the village board, okay. And they would review it. Regarding timing, it's not necessarily always the next meeting after we the commission recommends it, but yes, it'd have to go to the village board for final approval. Just as if it was a zoning variance, they recommend their decision, and here the commission is recommending their changes to the code.
Does it go through legal initially?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the full KTJ team and myself and will be involved in it. So myself and Jessica, because Administrator Walsh will probably be out with it.
Baby.
Yeah, with the baby. So.
Okay. Thank you.
So we still have a ways to go, but the big one is.
Oh, we're definitely in the home stretch.
Yeah, I agree.
We're definitely in the home stretch. Okay. Discussion regarding protection promotion, river forest architecture and history. Do we have anything?
Nope.
No. No.
Any other business?
None.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Luke?
Chair Franek?
Aye.
Commissioner Forehand?
Aye.
Commissioner Sager?
Aye.
Commissioner Schutzenhofer?
Aye.
And Commissioner Graham White?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.